So, I am really excited to announce our speaker has traveled all the way. By the way, Joe, you're doing a great job tonight. Everybody in the back is staying calm and quiet, so I know it's you're making it happen. But I just want to thank you all for being here and for our speaker tonight, all the way from Paso Robles. Let's give it up for Matt. Hi guys, my name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Damn, there's a lot of you here tonight. Thanks, Derek, for asking us to come down and share. Welcome to the new people. I'm a trucker, and I was on my way home from El Paso, Texas, a month and a half ago, and I get a text at like 9:30 at night that says, "Will you come and speak at the Golden Group?" And I'm like, I don't even know what town the Golden Group is in. And my first thought is, I sit there and I look at this, and I'm driving through the desert trying not to text while I'm driving my big rig, right? And I'm like, the only thing I could think of was, who is this? So anyway, that's how I met Derek. Tonight was the first time I met him, so again, thank you. That is my wife, Laura. And Laura is the best thing that has happened to me ever. And I had to go through a lot of stuff to get to the place to where I could have a life with Laura. And I'll talk about a lot of that tonight, or some of it. My mom is back there. Followed her in here. She was 12 years sober when I got here. If you're new and you're not sure why you are here, most non-alcoholics don't normally end up in here. There are occasions, but, you know, I didn't set out. My goal in life was not to be an AA, you know? If you would have known me 20 years ago, you know, or 35 years ago, you would have had no doubt that I didn't belong here. But we're from Santa Maria. I was born in Santa Maria, graduated from Santa Maria High School. My family, we had a cattle ranch out Highway 166, and we were raised up there. We spent summers up there, weekends, and, you know, we had cattle, and we'd work the cattle, and we'd drink, and, you know, and everybody drank. You know, those of you that come from a family that are like the only alcoholic in the family, I feel for you. You know, I hear those stories when somebody says, 12 of us in the family, I'm the only alcoholic, you know? There's, like, in my immediate family, and like Laura, you know, I don't call anybody an alcoholic, but if you've been an AA or you have died from alcoholism, I think it's okay to call you an alcoholic. And we've had both in my family. My dad died when he was 50 years old from alcoholism, buried him on my 17th birthday, and it says right on his death certificate, the primary cause, I still have a copy of it, the primary cause on the death certificate was pancreatitis. His pancreas failed. Secondary cause is alcoholism. Buried him on my 17th birthday, did what he would have wanted us to do, got drunk afterwards for about 3 days. And those of us, you know, were starting to discover cocaine, and we just did what we do. And by then, when I got drunk, the first time I drank, I was 12, 13, somewhere in there, okay? Barely 13. Smoked dope right after that, and I was like, okay, I get it. I see what the big people are doing. I see why they get drunk at the holidays. I see why they get drunk at weddings. I see why they get drunk at funerals, you know? Those were the role models. And so some people, you know, whether it's genetic, whether it's environmental, whether it's biological, whatever it is, I stopped worrying about all that years ago. I just know that when you look at a family like mine, it's trotted right through us. You know, it hit all of us. It didn't miss, you know, I mean, there's, well, anyway, it's caught most of us. My family had, my mom and dad had split. They split up when I was 12 or so, and you know, I started, we'd moved down to Ventura, and I started hanging out with people that were doing dope all the time, and I'm like 13, you know, and it was like, okay, this works. Don't really know what else to do. These guys are all doing this. By the time I was in high school, I was loaded on something every day. And I functioned. I was living up on my family's ranch at 16 years old and going to Santa Maria High School. And I graduated from high school barely. I was drinking in all the bars in the area because I had fake IDs. I had two brothers who looked pretty much like me. And so I'd use their IDs. I was 4 and 6 years younger. They're 4 and 6 years older than me, and it's perfect. So Chalet, Sally Farmer, right next door here. I don't know if anybody remembers that. I snorted cocaine in that parking lot right there, you know? Laura was talking about drinking at home, isolating. I was the opposite of that. I was everywhere, you know? I was everywhere in town and at Butch Cassidy's. And I mean, when I did turn 21, I'd been drinking in all the bars from San Luis to Buellton for 5 years, you know, and I'd go to places like Jocko's and go in. It's my 21st birthday, and the bartenders were like, what? You know? walked on the bar and Jocko's on my 21st birthday. I don't know why. Just, you know, one end or the other. You know, we were just, it was insane. The ranch thing, we were, you know, we'd go drive up to the town of Cuyama because there was a bar up there. It was just nuts. It was just, it was crazy. We were loaded. And then, you know, before my dad died, I mean, he was doing his thing. By then, he was, you know, he was drinking brandy all day, every day. He was, you know, I mean, to die at 50 years old from alcoholism, you have to really be trying. And he was trying. He was drinking. They said, you know, he died in El Paso, Texas. He had been attempting to try to go back to work, which he couldn't do. And he was on the way home from Louisiana, and he made it as far as El Paso with my older brother and his girlfriend, and ended up in the hospital there and was there for 10 days. And my other brother and I, we flew back or drove back, and my other brother and sister flew, and we walk into this hospital. And they had him tied down to a bed, and I hadn't seen him in over a month, and he was bloated. I mean, he literally, at this point, he hadn't worked in 7 years. He lived in places like the Santa Maria, and I'm going into his story a little more than I normally do, but I guess that's where we're going tonight. It was all about drinking. It, you know, in later years before the family split up, it was starting to get more and more crazy. And, you know, my story was I was like 10 when I started to go out. There's something different in our family. I didn't have people over. I didn't have kids over to spend the night, you know, when I was 10 and 11, because you never knew when the old man was going to come home and go off, you know. So Mom went around putting out the fires, and, you know, we just kind of went around like everything was okay, you know. You know, the pink elephant and, you know, put a tarp over it and doctor it and color it and pretend it's not there, right? So anyway, El Paso, Texas. When my brother and I drive from there, we drive straight through. We get some wine and some weed and some whites, and we drive to El Paso to see my father, who's in the hospital dying of alcoholism. And drive straight through. And it's 900, I'm a trucker, I know this, I've been doing loads from here, it's 945 miles from Santa Maria. And we walk into the hospital, and he is he's in ICU, his body has thrown in the towel, he's got wires and machines, he's nailed, I mean, they have him strapped down to the bed, and I haven't seen him in a month, and he looks up at me, and his eyes are crazy, and he looks up at me, and he said, "You got to get me a drink." Never forget it. And those are the last words. I think those were the last words he ever said that I remember, because he was there for a day, but he was in and out and conscious, and his organs failed, and he ended up dying. It was like 12. At one point, they tell us he's getting better. 6 days into this adventure, every day it was up and it was down and something new. You know, he, at one point his heart quit. We never had heart trouble in the family, but, you know, it was deteriorated so bad. Put the paddles on him and bring it back, but then he's okay, you know. And so after like 6 or 7 or 8 days, whatever. I know he was there 10. But at a certain point, he was going to make it. They said, it looks good. So my brother, both of my brothers and my sister and I were staying at the Ramada Inn in El Paso, Texas, and we head to the bar. And we're on he's got a charge account going. So we're in there drinking. And this is 1976. Four of us have just found out our father is doing okay and he's not going to die from alcoholism. And so we get drunk and I remember the tab was $125. And drinks were like a dollar a piece. Yeah. And there's four of us drinking them, okay? What? You know? What? You know? What's wrong with that? It's all crazy now, you know? He dies, like I said, you know, and I go through my teens after that. I attempted to go to college. Which was just an attempt, you know, anything. It was always about getting loaded. And I used to do a little of the rodeo thing. I was going down to Buellton a lot, down to Santa Ynez, and I'd hang out with some guys, and one guy was a complete space cadet. He was the guy that I roped with, and his roommate was a coke dealer. And I would go down there on Thursdays and stay till Sunday, and you know, all weekend it was on. So one night I was 20 years old and had been on one of these runs down there, and we started at Maddie's Tavern at noon drinking these things called Mexican flags. I don't know why I remember. It's a layered liqueur, okay? And I'm assuming it's red, green, and clear, or white, or something, right? So we're drinking those at noon, right? It wasn't that good, you're right. And we worked our way all the way through. You know, we were famous for just doing these all day, you know, hit all the bars. And that's the way I like to drink, you know? And we're throwing in enough chemicals to keep us going the whole way. And we worked our way all the way through San Ynez, Solvang, no, we never made Los Olivos, but anyway, we went together. The last stop was Zacka Creek, which is now closed, but it's still there, right? But it's been closed down for years. I left Zacka Creek, it must have been about 3:30 in the morning, and I had a 78 Chevy half-ton pickup, and I was alone, and I drove, I don't know why I left. I don't remember leaving. I remember walking into the Zacka Creek. The next thing I remember, I was upside down, and I remember hearing glass and metal crashing. And I remember that like it was yesterday, and I'm 55. This was 35 years ago, and I still remember that like it was that split second. And I went, and I was upside down, and then the next thing I know, literally from me to the back end of the room, my pickup was upside down facing me in the middle of 101, what is now a dog kennel over in Santa Maria Way, used to be the Highway Patrol station. 4 in the morning, and I'm standing there barefooted, my shirt is ripped off of my back, the dust hasn't settled yet, there's some trucks that are pulled over, they're running over to, and I'm standing there, they're going to the wreck thinking there's people inside, and I looked at this and I went, wow. This was the first time, I'm 20 years old, this was the first time there were consequences to my drinking. I had been sliding under the radar, dancing on bars and stuff besides that, but, you know, this was the first time that there was a consequence. I hadn't been to jail, and I totaled that truck, rolled it end over end 4 times, and fortunate for me, thank God, I was the only one in it. I should have died in it, and it certainly would have killed anybody else. And it scared me so bad that I got up the next day and I said, I got to stop driving. So I bought a van and I started sleeping in the van most of the time, and I went on drinking for another 14 years and doing what we do. So there's that gap, okay? And that's the way it was, fill in the blanks. The biggest joke is I never went to jail, which is a complete joke because I took the sobriety test 6 times, and only one time did I actually just have 2 beers, like we always tell them, right? And the other time, but this was years ago too, you know? I mean, there was one time I was completely wiped out. I'm in down in the valley again, and I was at Anderson's, and I was going to San Ynez, and I met some, you know, there was a group, and we got in the parking lot. We were going to go to San Ynez to party all night. But before, we met in the parking lot outside of the bar, and somebody had a bunch of Coke, and so we snorted up all this Coke, and now I'm like this. And so I get in the car, and I'm driving to San Ynez, and it's like 12 o'clock at night on a Sunday. And I get pulled over in Solvang. And in those days, the cops would pull you over. And I have nothing against cops, okay, at all. But they would pull you over going through Solvang just because it was midnight. Yep. Or if it, okay, you guys have been there. Absolutely. You know, I love AA. You don't get that at the Kiwanis, you know what I mean? So they get me out of the car. They give me, you know, they say, can you walk? I walk the line. Absolutely. Absolutely. What do you got? You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. How about saying the alphabet? Alphabet? I got the alphabet. A, B, C, D. And I go through the alphabet, and then I say, how about French? I know it in French. They say, they. I start saying the alphabet in French. What an asshole. Huh? I mean, can you imagine? What an arrogant asshole I have become. They're like, get in the car and get out of here. You know, I mean, I have been wiped out drunk for 10 or 11 hours. Mm. Always skirting underneath, you know, I don't know why. I mean, I should have gone to jail plenty of times. And then the last drunk log, and I'll get sober. Sarah reminded me of this, who I had never met. Yes, we have met, but she said, yeah, you are a legend in Guadalupe. Like 90, which is really something you want on your resume.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But like 1979, it was Sunday Elks Rodeo weekend, which coming from the ranch and the rodeo, and I mean, know all the cowboys, and I mean, the rodeo weekend, it starts on Wednesday and it goes till the following Tuesday. You know, everybody else has a little bit on Saturday and that's it, but so the party ended up at the Far Western always after the rodeo was done on Sunday afternoon, and upstairs at the Far Western they would have a mariachi band, and those of us that don't want to quit, that's, you know, so we're out there, and I got a buddy of mine, the place is packed, we're, you know, everybody's been on a roll for days, and this crazy buddy who was a cowboy I'd gone to school with at Cal Poly, and he said, we're upstairs and we're leaning against the windowsill and we're looking down at the awning. You know the awning that had the lights on it that said Far Western around it, right? That awning's down there a little ways, but it doesn't look that far. If you're, you know, from the ground or from up there, it doesn't look that far. And he says, I'll bet you $20 you won't jump out that window. Jump out there onto the awning. I'm like, that's the easiest $20 I ever earned in my life. Are you kidding me? So I go out the window. And it's metal, and it kind of does this a little bit. It's that awning that you saw with the lights, and now I can't get back in because it's too far up. So now I'm hung out to dry out here. And so I reach down. I'll never forget this part. I reach down with one hand like that, like if you ever jumped out of the back of a pickup, like when you were young, you know, and used to do that kind of thing, right? I reach down, and I just jump off. And I'm wearing cowboy boots, and it's about 12 feet straight off. And I land on both heels, okay? And it was just like if you took a sledgehammer to both of my heels, barefooted, right, is what it felt like. But I don't go down, of course, you know? I'm okay. Nobody, you know? So I come back in the front door, and everybody's like, ah, that was fun, and they forgot about it. And I come limping. Well, upstairs they know what's going on, right? I come limping back up the stairs, and everybody's still looking out the window for where that crazy stuff. While I come walking up the stairs again, and I walk up and sit down. I'm going, what's going on? Some guy says, say some crazy son of a bitch just jumped out the window. So I had a warrant out for my rest for a while in Guadalupe, and God bless the owners of the Far Western, and we took care of that, you know. So anyway, so that was the high point of the drunk stuff, you know. It was a lot of fun. There were times where it was a lot of fun, and at the end it wasn't fun anymore. My body, I was 34 years old, and my body, every time I drank, I was getting sick all the time. And I'd been through crazy relationships. In my early 20s, I thought, I'll try to have a relationship. I had no clue how to, you know, I've been drunk my whole life for 10 years. And at 22, now I'm going to have a relationship, you know. So that was sick, and that went in and out. And so when I walked in here at 34 years old, my ass was thoroughly kicked. And if you're new, my story was that my ass had to be kicked. It took every drink. I wrecked that truck when I was 20. I looked at a picture. I was cleaning out our office the other day and look at the picture. I still have two pictures of that pickup that I wrecked. It scares the shit out of me now. The next day, the day after it happened, it never even fazed me. Yeah. I was drunk in 3 days after that and never thought a thing about it. Now it scares the hell out of me. I don't know why I walked through all that. You know, maybe this is where the higher power stuff comes in. You know, I just show up, do my job. My last drunk, they started random drug testing in the trucking industry in 1991, and so I had been smoking dope for, as Father Tom says, non-habit-forming marijuana every day for 20 years, so I had to quit that, and I mean within short order, I had a hole in my stomach because I was using that air just a little bit. You know, I functioned, I always had jobs and a roof over my head, but I'd use that every night just to knock that rough edge off, okay? I ended up in a program called Adult Children of Alcoholics 2 years before I got here. Did some good work there, but not all of the work, but did some of the work and helped me to understand the effects of alcoholism. The first, if I remember right, the first step in that program is powerless over the effects of alcoholism on our lives, and our lives have become unmanageable. And like the other 12-step programs, everything else was down the line. I never worked the steps all the way through, but I had fellowship and I understood a lot, and I started learning something about a normal relationship and why I couldn't have a normal relationship, mom, all this time has been sober at that point, maybe 10 years when I first come into ACA, and so I'm going to a candlelight meeting every week in San Luis up there, and like I said, I'm doing some good work. But I'm still drinking on the weekends. You know, it was great because I could have a little of what you have and still drink, you know. But after a time, that wasn't working. It wasn't working very well. And so my last drunk, I had gone to a couple of conventions, and there I actually, because I'm in ACA, see, it's safe to stop by and hear what you guys are, you know, what's going on, right? And go, oh, this is cool. And then go on and do my thing, right? And the last one, there was the Santa Maria Convention was at the fairgrounds, and there was a gal who spoke she is a gal from the bad side of LA that I had zero in common with, except for alcoholic. And I was like, wow, that's pretty good stuff. And so I take off after the convention, and there was somebody in Bakersfield, another speaker who I heard that year. He was the first one. He was in May, and I was on my way to Vegas. His name was Scott R., and he died of cancer a few years ago, and he was the best. But he was the first, he was my Eskimo, he was the first guy I heard. And then after I heard him, because mom was there and I stopped by to see her and heard a couple speaker meetings, I take off and go to Vegas and get drunk for a few days. And so, but you know, the seed has been planted. And so the last one was here that day, that Sunday, and then I went down and to a concert to hear the Moody Blues with a couple friends of mine. My best old drinking buddy, who I still love to death, in Santa Barbara, I go to the County Bowl, hear the Moody Blues. We're sitting out at Longboard Saloon on the pier drinking pitchers of margaritas in the afternoon, and I'm telling them how great this AA stuff is. Man, these people are taking responsibility, you know, they're making commitments, you know. They got this higher power thing, and everybody's smiling, and, you know, and drinking. So we wake up, we get drunk, we go to the concert, and I woke up the next morning and asked my friends, this is the Moody Blues, for those of you who know the Moody Blues, I said, why didn't they sing Nights in White Satin last night? That would, anybody knows, that would have been the encore, and by then I was too drunk and I don't remember, and oh, a blackout. Well, I'd had bigger blackouts, like the night I drove from Buellton and almost killed myself in Santa Maria, but this was one where I was also starting to hear, and I didn't remember that. And we stayed at the Blue Sky Hotel, which is one block from the water in Santa Barbara. And I walked down from there, walked out, looked at the ocean. It was foggy, but it was beautiful. And I walked downstairs and I looked in the newspaper machine and I asked God, I looked in the newspaper and it said it was September 26, 1994, and I asked God to make that my sobriety date, which I knew you guys had. And it has been to this day. To save you the math, that's 20 years I had this September. And it had, yeah, and so that's where it started. That's where the journey started. I came home and I called Mom. And I said, she never pushed this. If she would have ever pushed it, I may have never gotten here. I absolutely learned about attraction rather than promotion, and I hope that 10 or 15 years from now that I can do attract, you know, or today certainly, but you know what I mean, that she had to show me that this works, and she didn't. So when I got here, I was ready, and I called her, and I said, I could hardly say the words, and this is honest to God's truth. I remember calling her after my dad died in the hospital in El Paso, and when she answered the phone and said, hello, I'm almost 17 years old, and I couldn't say, my dad just died, no matter how crazy, and I said, you know what I mean? And when I called her, the last time I said, I'm an alcoholic, it was the same thing. I almost couldn't get the words out, and there was a pause, and she didn't say, well, you know, we've been saving a seat for you. She said, I'm sorry to hear that. And it's honest to God's truth. I'll never forget it. It was over 20 years ago, and I remember it like it was yesterday. She said, I'm sorry to hear that. She knew that this was the thing that had been getting me through my life and all of the craziness all of these years. This had been the thing. And that's the thing, when we're new, we're giving up the thing that's been getting us through. All this, I mean, I get that now, you know, and she got that, and it was, my first thought, how am I going to go to weddings? How am I going to go to funerals?
Right.
You know, one end or the other, it doesn't matter. Everything I do revolves around snow skiing. Everything I do revolves around drag racing, revolves around drinking, everything that I do in my life. And so what I did, she said, okay, I was living in Tascadero. She says, there's a couple of guys, she knew a couple of guys up there. She says, go here, go talk to these guys, go raise your hand. And so I did. You know, I went in and I hooked up and I went to a speaker meeting and I did not raise my hand. If you're new and you don't raise your hand, I didn't raise my hand at my first meeting, but I did my second. Because I wanted what they had, and by the second one and the first one, I was standing in the back with my arms behind me, my hands behind me, and a speaker meeting, and then I went up to the speaker because I heard everything that he said, and he ended up being my first sponsor. And he said, okay, go to this meeting. And I hooked up with these guys, and they were going to 4 or 5 meetings a week. And I got busy, you know, and I had been around the program a little bit from the fringes, and so I wasn't afraid when I came in. And I had seen alcoholism at its finest. You know, seen it kill my dad, a very ugly alcoholic death, you know. I mean, and some of us go down struggling, you know. I mean, I have seen people, we've all seen people die. If you've been around here long enough, you've seen people die, you know, you'll see people die from this deal that never realize they're an alcoholic, that never, like it says in the book, admitted to our innermost selves. The first step in recovery is in admitted to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic. They never got to that point, and they died from alcoholism. I was ready. I was ready when I got here. I got with guys who were busy, like Laura, you know, like her first sponsor, Candy. You know, they got in, and they got busy, and it says, okay, we're going to do this. And these were things that I normally would not have done, okay, that before I had to be ready. I had to go through everything and have my ass thoroughly kicked. Before I was ready to take this direction, before this was lame, you know? So you gotta be kidding me. Concept of a higher power? Are you kidding me? I mean, I was raised in the Catholic Church, and I heard Father Tom say this, but this is my story, this is some of our story. I stopped searching for any kind of a higher power when I started getting loaded. When I was 12 and 13 years old and I started getting loaded, after that, and before that, it was this Catholic church, and I'm not knocking the Catholic church. Laura and I got married in the Catholic church 2 years ago. So I'm not knocking the Catholic church like a lot of people do, okay? But I came in here with a 13-year-old's concept of a God that I did not understand. And I got busy working the steps, and I started, I walk in, and I, Jacob, stick that at him. My name's Jacob. I love that. I love that. I'm talking to Jacob, and he tells me that you're a sponsor. Beautiful. You know, I'm like, I love that. That's what, you know, these guys are like, go over there and shake hands with these guys. Go introduce yourself. Clean the coffee pot at the home group. I walk in, now I got the home group. Tuesday night, surrender to win, Tascadero. I don't want to clean the coffee pot. Clean the coffee pot, that's your new job. I don't want to clean the coffee pot. All right, I'll clean the coffee pot. After the first week, anybody gets near that coffee pot, yeah, that's, you know. I realized the gift that they were giving me. I was 4 years sober. I was 4 years sober, and I had secretaried a couple meetings. You know, I'd done a little of this, a little of that. I tried doing business meetings, and they just killed me. God bless you that do the business meetings for us, because I just want to jump off the balcony. I do. And it's not you, it's me, okay? Somebody said, you want to go inside a penitentiary? And so Lee C. hooked me up. Actually, it was Curtis from Lompoc. Curtis was the first one, yeah. Curtis Larkin, and I can say his last name because he did everywhere he went. And I did a lot of H&I with Curtis, and I saw, I had a picture of him going through some stuff the other day. He's not with us anymore, and he was a beautiful man. And he was the one, they had a bunch, a big H&I thing in Santa Maria at the convention one year where they had four, or not a big thing, but there was the Saturday afternoon meeting, and there were four guys broke it up, did like 15 minutes apiece. And Curtis was one of them. And I went up to him after the meeting and hooked up. He said, meet me at the meeting in San Luis. Laura, by the way, is our H&I committee chairman and has been for 2 years. She doesn't just hang around. She is involved in it. Went there, met Curtis, met people, got cleared, went into Lompoc. Within a couple years, I had a, I started doing a panel on the website at CMC. And then was doing somebody else's panel, ended up doing my own panel. I got to go in there twice a month. And as Laura said, this was just a service that worked for me. And then I got to go inside what Laura was talking about, what we've been doing, Heidi's been coming in with, is going in with the lifers on the east side. And these are guys, there's a whole bunch of guys that are like my age that have been down since they were 20. Guys, people died. I don't know what they all did, but somebody somehow died. And you know what? I heard on a tape, because I wasn't sober, Norm Alpe said, seconds and inches. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, these guys did some extreme stuff that I didn't do, but a couple seconds over here, a couple inches over there, a couple little bit more of this drug, and I could have done what they did and ended up where they were. And so why did I walk away from the wreck? Why did I, you know, why does this stuff end up where it is? Why are they there and I'm here? I don't know. Mm-hmm. To me now, that's the higher power stuff that I found by working the steps, you know, the AA coincidences that started happening when I worked the steps. Recently, doing the west, the east side is really a trip. The guys that are doing life. The other guys are doing jail. I've done county jail also. And the east side, these guys are working a program inside there. There's a group that has been in there for decades, and they pass this down, and they're sponsoring people. And you don't want to get in a debate over the big book with these guys. They'll tell you what page this and that is on. But you don't see that in a lot of the institutions like you do this one. One of the recent stories, last June, June or July, sometime last summer, I was inside, and there was a guy who was getting, they asked when the meeting starts, is anybody going home? And there was a guy who was, they said, yeah, he said, yeah, I'm going home within the next month or so. And he got up and he shared a little bit, and then he sat down, and he was living in Los Osos, and he was going to Morro Bay, driving over to Morro Bay, and he remembers getting in his car in Los Osos and driving to Morro Bay. He remembers getting in the car in Los Osos. The next thing he knows, he wakes up handcuffed to a bed at Sierra Vista in San Luis. Mm-hmm. He had no idea what happened. All he remembers is leaving Los Osos, only he killed two people that night. Mm-hmm. And he remembers none of it, and he did 18 years. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of those guys that we've met on the east side. I mean, I've met guys that have, you know, these guys, there's guys that have done some gnarly stuff, okay? You know, I don't go down, I never got to that. I never did a lot of the stuff that they did. I didn't do violent crimes. But I drove drunk a lot. Mm-hmm. I drove in blackouts a lot. I did what these guys did. He did 18 years, and he just got out. Laura and I gave him a ride home. He was at the speaker meeting in San Luis, and we gave him a ride home, you know? And he said, I told him, I said, you know, I'm glad to see you're out, man. And he's one of us. Anybody in this room who, I mean, he got 18 years, and all he did was get in the car in a blackout. Mm-hmm. So, you know, gratitude. Whew. You know, so how do I get from there to here? I don't know. I just keep showing up, you know, and the gifts in 20 years of sobriety. I mean, the stuff that we walk through, my friend Mike, who came down with us, you know, I knew Mike 25 years ago. We worked at the same company for years, and I'm in my home group meeting. I got there late, so I'm sitting in the back, and last summer, and this guy, they asked for newcomers, this guy says, "Hey, Mike, I'm an alcoholic." And I said, "What the?" And it's my friend Micah, you know, who we've stayed in touch, and he's got 6 months now and doing terrific. He's got a family and a job and came in with, you know, and so I've gotten to watch the gift there, you know. But for every one of those, you know, I've gotten to see people die from this that I've known close. You know, and the other night, New Year's Eve, I'm a trucker, and we have dogs. We don't have kids, we have dogs, right? And my 10-year-old Scottish Terrier, who I've had since he was 4 months old, we're playing ball in the backyard, and he starts peeing blood. And I take him to the hospital, and we find out on New Year's Eve, take him to the emergency vet clinic, and we find out that he's got a tumor in his bladder. You know, and it's just like, you know, and so we're dealing with that. And we have, if there's a good chance it's operable, okay, it is operable. And our vet is also a close friend, and so we're going to battle at it, okay? And he's in very good health, and we're hoping for the best, and we're going to do everything we can. But we've been hurt in the last couple days, you know? And I thought a couple, you know, I was thinking last night, 20 years since I've had a drink, and I thought, you know, I could just drink right now and not have to feel this. You know, I even told Laura last night, I said, "Do you think I could do a sedative?" She said, "I lost another dog 10 years ago to cancer, and he was 10 years old. That was 10 years ago, and it was one of the toughest things I've ever gone through, right?" Laura said, "Probably not, you know? Okay, you know, I think it through, and that's why I've got 20 years, because I don't do it. I talk about it to somebody or my sponsor, and, you know, and we walk through the stuff, and we get to feel the good, and I get to feel the good, and I get to feel the bad, and I get to feel, you know? And then no matter what happens with Monty, if anybody wants to pray for him, surgery is at 11 o'clock on Monday, you know, we walk through the stuff, the good and the bad. My old sponsor used to say he didn't know what would get him drunk, hitting the lotto or dying from cancer, or his wife dying from cancer. You know, and that's my story. I don't know which way it would go, but I know that if I'm here hanging out with you guys, if I'm coming in here and listening to you guys talk about this stuff that we do, and we go through all this stuff, and if you hang out here long enough, you're going to go through all of it. I've gone through all of it, the stuff that happens, the good and the bad, and everything in the middle. We don't drink. You know, I heard Dr. Paul in Paso when I was brand new, and he said, "We just don't drink." Who wrote page 449 on Accept, or 449 in third edition, right? We just don't drink. We just don't drink no matter what. Go to meetings, do the deal, try to be of service, and don't try to figure it out. Just show up and do it. So I think that's all I know. I want to thank all you.